We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
You might have to carve out a few extra minutes for Gabe DeArmond's segment here. just putting it out there. You may not want to give me that break signal too quick, because we're going to get into it deep with Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com. Gabe, good morning. How are you?
How are you?
Gabe, can I just tell you that I can remember us having a conversation a few months ago in which Kansas Athletics was dealing with the Les Miles situation and some realignment stuff. And I believe you said it was your favorite segment you'd ever done because you got to listen to him.
It was pretty good, yeah.
So I've been looking forward to talking to you today, you know, just to talk about everything.
We had it out. We played a game.
I understand.
Gabe, we played a game earlier in the show, and I told Nate, start naming point spreads, and I'll let you know when I get to a number where I would feel comfortable taking Missouri at Allen Fieldhouse next week.
Oh, man.
And so I'm not going to tell you what I said. Now I want you to play the same game with Gabe now. Start at a number. And, Gabe, I want you to just be honest. I want you to say yes or no. And let's say you're betting, you know, 10 bucks with Nate. Tell me when we get to the amount of points that it would take
this
to get you to
take
Mizzou.
This is in all seriousness. I think the spread will probably be something like 20 to 25.
But I don't care about what Vegas
says. Well, let's just start there.
Gabe, okay, go. Say a number.
20.
I think it might actually be lower, but I would take Kansas at that.
Okay.
25.
No, keep going.
30.
I'd think about it.
35.
I'd probably take Missouri at 35.
There you go. Steve.
Not because I necessarily think Missouri will stay within 35. I was actually having this discussion with somebody last night. I think this game will be interesting in that I think we're going to find out just how pissed off Bill Self still is at Missouri.
Right.
Because I think he can win this game by almost as many as he wants to.
Like right.
Name the score type of thing.
Right.
I think he genuinely does like and respect Konzo. You know, all the people who made that move are gone from Missouri. So I don't know that. I mean, I don't know if Bill will just say, no, let's do this. Let's go 60, and let's keep our guys in, you know, all the way. Or if – I mean, I don't know if you guys have noticed, Missouri's strong point hasn't really been the first half this year. They haven't been – I mean, the second half really hasn't been either.
Wait. What's the strong point been?
Right. No, the second half has been bad but better.
Okay.
So, you know, I could see easily Kansas being up like 50 to 17 at halftime, and then Bill just going, we're good. You know, let's let some of these other guys get a chance to play in this game and all that. And, you know, I mean, when you get up 30 points, it kind of it's really hard to stay at that level because guys just don't stay engaged. So, I mean, while it could theoretically be like 60 if Bill wants it to be, I don't think ultimately it will.
Okay, so by the way, he piqued my interest when we got to 40. Then I said I'd consider it. Okay.
Yeah.
But whatever. Okay, so last night they get blown out on the road against Liberty. At one point, the score was 33-7, and so we're not talking about just losing to the Kansas City Ruse or just losing to Liberty. Getting blown out at home to the Ruse, getting blown out on the road against Liberty, and we had this discussion. This is why I was so mad about how I thought Konzo Martin mishandled the final 5 minutes of the game against Oklahoma in the tournament, because that was a chance for Mizzou to win an NCAA tournament game, and I did think that was important and significant, because I said that day after, I said, because that chance won't be happening anytime soon. It sure as ain't going to happen next year. I didn't know it was going to be this bad. And so, Gabe, he created this. This is his fifth year. He ran off some players, whether we talk about personalities, everything else, they were clearly better than what they've got now. He handpicked this freshman class. He handpicked all these transfer portal guys. This is his squad, and this looks horrific. Gabe. Right?
Is there a question in here somewhere?
But
I mean, I agree.
But how do you defend it? How
you don't,
can you defend it?
Awful. I mean, the most damning thing to me last night was, first of all, this is not the Liberty team of the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, I came into this year thinking, hey, Liberty's a pretty good squad. That's going to be a tough game on the road. You know, they've gone to the NCAA tournament a couple times, and they've got it going and all this. Well, they lost to Iona and Manhattan.
What?
They got beat by, I don't know, 15 or so by LSU. Their best win coming into last night was the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. They were 3-3, I think. And if you watched that game, if you just took the uniforms, the names off the uniforms, there is no question who the better team was. I mean, it's not. Like, they are better athletically. They have more talent. They have guys that can, you know, make shots other than one. They were clearly just a better team. That was not a fluke last night. If those teams played 10 times, I think Liberty wins 8 of them. And, no, I said last night after the game, you know, college basketball teams can be redone in a year. I mean, a lot of them were this year. Missouri has 9 new guys, and they've played teams where they're the more experienced team already this year. So you can do it. But the problem is all these guys are supposed to come back next year, and this was Konzo's remaking the team. These are the guys he wanted. And so he doesn't get the chance to do that again next year. If you get to the end of this year and they're, you know, 8-24 or whatever it is, and the only real solution that makes any sense is, well, we got to chase some of these guys off and get new transfers in, then he doesn't get to do that because these were his guys. That opportunity isn't there if I'm making the decision. So the only solution then is, hey, the guys that are here better get a whole lot better between now and April.
That doesn't look promising. And so most people felt like no matter how bad the team gets, that financially Mizzou couldn't make a move on Konzo at the end of the season. But it can get that bad, right? I mean, this is headed.
Look, I don't know where the money comes from, but we live in a world where just a year ago, these college athletic departments were telling us, we don't have any money, we're broke. And now, like, places are finding money to give football coaches who have had 1 year, $9.5 million a year. Like, I think we need to quit underestimating how important college sports is to people with a lot of money.
Right.
And if they are – I wouldn't have said 2 weeks ago that I thought it was a legitimate – even after the UMKC loss, I thought, yeah, it's awful, but just everything around it, I just don't see it. That's different now. I think if this is what this team is going to be, and let's be honest, we're a quarter of the way through the season. Like, it's all well and good to say it's early, but this is the equivalent of, you know, an NFL team being 0-4 with, like, a blowout loss to the Jaguars. This isn't the upside of this. I thought they'd be a couple games under 500 at the beginning of the season. That's, like, the upside now. I mean... Georgia, the worst team in the SEC, just beat Memphis a couple nights ago. You know, Missouri has one more game against a non-high major basketball team. And then they play 19 straight SEC games and at Iowa State, which, you know, was 2-something last year, and now they're 6-0 under a new head coach. So they may not be favored to win another game after Tuesday. And while I don't think it's likely that Missouri ends up, I don't know, I guess that would be 5-27. I also don't think it's very likely that they win more than about 9 or 10. And at that point, like, that's bad enough. It absolutely is a discussion. And I want to be clear, because I know how people hear things on the radio and then go on the internet and say, well, this guy said this. I am not calling for Konzo Martin's job. Whatever. That's not my spot. If it happens, we'll cover it. I'm not saying he should be fired or anything like that. But if you get to the end of the year and it looks like it looks right now, it's absolutely a discussion that has to be had.
Gabe, any chance Mizzou could schedule Paul Quinn College again before the end of the year?
Hi, this is Barry White. And Paul Quinn College, in court cordially, did cordially invite your ass to come on down.
So, no, maybe not.
That, They shouldn't have done it the first time. Like, I don't even really. They're 4-4, but that doesn't count. They're 3-4.
Yeah.
Beating an NAIA team, that's not a thing.
Clearly, they needed a win. Okay, Gabe, before we let you go, Mizzou football, any guesses or any insight as to where they might be playing in the bowl game, and will Tyler Beatty be on the field?
Beatty said after the Arkansas game that he's going to play. I mean, obviously things can change, but I mean, Tyler's not a first-round pick. You know, I would think that he's a guy that likes playing football, and I would think he'll play.
Good.
But they could go legitimately anywhere after, you know, the New Year's Six bowls are picked, because I think the worst thing that happened to Missouri last weekend was LSU beating Texas A&M, because it made 13 SEC teams bowl eligible, and it also took Texas A&M out of that New Year's Six talk. So regardless of whether Alabama makes the playoff or not, you're only going to have Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss in those top bowl games. And so that's going to leave 10 SEC teams where you've got six selections. You've got the Citrus Bowl, then you've got a pool of six games, and Missouri could get in that. You know, they could go to Houston or Memphis or Nashville. But if they're out of that, then you go to the Birmingham Bowl, which picks, and then you go to the Gasparilla Bowl. Florida actually kind of makes a lot of sense there, because, like, Florida's not going to care, but it's in Tampa, and at least they'll have a few people that would go to the game. And then you've got one SEC team, and I'm not saying it's going to be Missouri, but it could be Missouri, which is basically just left to fill an available spot, which could be like the Quick Lane Bowl or I don't even know what half the bowls are called anymore, you know, like the Walnut Bowl or the Cactus Bowl. I don't know if those still exist.
Those sound good.
I mean, they could go legitimately anywhere and be playing like a non-Power 5 team, which I think is the worst possible case scenario, because there's absolutely no upside to winning that game. And if you lose it, you've now got a losing season with a loss to, like, you know, Western Michigan or something like that. And that really leaves a bad taste in people's mouths.
I'd like to see him play in the Frank Bowl, if that's at all possible.
Well,
we can try to make that happen here in Kansas City.
It's a swinging kind of bowl.
Gabe, I just be honest with you, I enjoy the discussion on the Tigers' Lair at PowerMizzou.com. It was heated last night, and I'm going to go back in for more later on. So, Gabe, thank you so much.
Hey, Stephen, if you don't get to it today, we're about to have the same discussion 24 more times.
Okay, hey, I'm looking forward to it. Gabe, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys, see you.
That was Gabe Yarman from PowerMizzou.com, and now we have Matt Walters to talk about the Wildcats. What's up, Matt? How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Tough to follow that feel-good segment, I'm sure, but we're going to do it. Matt, I'll ask you the same question I asked Gabe there about bowl destination. What are you hearing? Any possibilities out there that you've heard that you really like as far as Kansas State and a bowl destination?
Well, first off, I would say it's good for Kansas State just to be playing in a bowl once again. I would say that, you know, it sounds like Orlando or Houston may be the best bets. Iowa State recently was in Orlando, so I think that's why Kansas State could be a selection there. But those would be, to me, the two odds-on favorites where K-State lands.
How important would it be for the program to finish strong and wherever they go to finish the season with a win? We were talking with Gabe about how it would be leave a bad taste in the mouths of Missouri fans if they go and play a non-Power 5 and lose a game like that and have to sit with that in the offseason. As far as Kansas State, you know, they started off fast and had some struggles, then put together a nice winning streak, and then and didn't finish the way they wanted. And so how much would you put into finishing the season strong with a win in a bowl game?
I think that is very, very important, because for just what you said, I mean, you know, Kansas State picked itself up by the bootstraps and found a way to get to 7-3. And, you know, they play a very good Baylor team, which is obviously playing in the Big 12 championship game tomorrow. And to me, that was the most physically demanding game of the conference season for Kansas State. And K-State kind of got beat up in that ball game. It was a low-scoring game, and K-State, you know, came up on the short end, losing by 10, and then, you know, the loss to the the loss to Texas was deflating. I don't think there's any way around it, even though K-State didn't have Skylar Thompson, and didn't have a couple of guys in that ball game. The fact that Texas, and I'm going to continue to just be mind blown how on earth Texas gave up 57 and lost to Kansas, other than they just absolutely didn't care about the game of football that day. But that one still stings. That one's going to sting. And I think, you know, for K-State to get just some semblance of momentum is going to take a bowl win. It doesn't matter. You know, a lot of projections. I know Jerry Palm is showing K-State and Mississippi State hooking up. That would be a tough matchup because Mississippi State can chuck it all over the field. But, yeah, I think a bowl win is very important. You know, the fans are buzzing because there have been a handful of guys going to the portal, and that's a whole different story. So, you know, to consider the stretches K-State had this year, a win kind of turns around the loss to Baylor and Texas, at least in my opinion.
Hey, so Skylar Thompson, do you expect him to be recovered and everything and start and play in the bowl game whenever that comes?
I would think there's a pretty good chance, Soccer Boy, that he wants to that he wants to play. He's going to do everything he can to get ready for that ball game. You know, he was on the sidelines down in Austin. He warmed up, quote unquote, before the ball game. But I would lean toward there's a pretty good chance that he plays in the bowl game.
And you referenced the transfer portal. How active do you think? I mean, I guess everybody's got to be these days, but how active do you think both coming and going things will be for K-State on that front once the season's over?
I think you just asked and answered the question because it's going to be active for everybody, both coming and going. And the portal is frustrating for me. I know it's the way of the world right now. I know it's the way for college football and college basketball, but I'm not a fan, and I don't, you know, to me, it takes away some of the, I guess I'll say maybe honor of, when you make a commitment to somebody and, you know, there are things that happen. Kids make mistakes. I get that. But then there are also kids that I think use the portal as a backdoor out. But Kansas State is just like anybody else. You know, they're direly thin at running back now. They're going to have to find some running backs. I think they're still going to have to go find some linebackers. I mean, they're going to have to utilize the portal. There's no doubt. But, you know, I think everybody just kind of sits on pins and needles and checks in on the portal every 15 minutes just to see who the next person is that's jumped in.
Hey, Matt, you saw both teams up close, so I'd like just to get your informed opinion. Who do you think wins the Big 12 championship game between Baylor and Oklahoma State?
Well, I tell you, that's going to be a heck of a game tomorrow. I personally like Oklahoma State just because I think their offense is a little bit better, but I also think their defense is just a little bit better. What I would say is that the defense for Baylor, to me, is more physical than Oklahoma State's, and I don't mean that badly towards OSU, obviously because I said I think their defense is better, but I think it's a knockdown dragout, and I think the right two teams got in there. Baylor's been awfully consistent. You know, their backup quarterback has been solid as well, and I give a slight edge to Oklahoma State. I'd say Oklahoma State probably by, you know, either 4 or 7 tomorrow down in Arlington.
Hey, before we let you go, Matt, let's switch over to a little basketball because K-State plays at Wichita State. That's a fun game down in Wichita. I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are on leading into that game.
18 years is way past due for this ball game. I've thought forever that, you know, this, you have to play Wichita State in my mind. They are as blue-collar a team as there is. They're not great offensively. This is going to be a defensive Knockdown, drag out, bloody knuckle affair right in the middle of the ring. I think maybe the first one to 55 is the one that wins the game. Again, they held Wichita State held Oklahoma State to 51. So I am very happy that these two teams are getting together. It's a huge game for K-State. These next two, with Wichita State on Sunday and then Marquette coming to Manhattan next Wednesday, are gigantic games for the Cats.
All right, Matt, we look forward to, and that'll be nice. I think we'll have a chance to watch that game leading into Sunday night football, and so a nice co-main event for K-State fans to watch that matchup before the Chiefs take the field. Matt, we appreciate the time, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Guys, take care. Have a good weekend.
You do the same thing. That is our friend Matt Walters talking about Kansas State. Now, let's talk to John Kirby.
Kansas!
John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Stephen. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right, man. Let's start with, I want to ask you the same question that I asked Matt about the Big 12 title game. Baylor, Oklahoma State, who you got?
I like Oklahoma State. I saw some of their first game, and I don't know how much Baylor can score on Oklahoma State, Stephen. So I'm going to go with the Cowboys in that one.
All right. Cowboys favored by 5.5, and so yep. We have two votes for the Cowboys here on the Blitz.
JK, let's try to put this first year of the Lance Leipold era in context. Where do you come out in terms of just like what do we learn? What do we think about the direction of the program and all that after season one?
Well, Nate, the direction of the program is good. I mean, I don't even know if that is really an argument or can be debated. I mean, Kansas football, from all accounts of what I watched and followed the team, I mean, it's going in the right direction. I know you and I bring this up a lot, but, you know, you look back at, you know, the few times in our lifetime where Kansas football has been successful, and this has a Mangino feel to it, the way Mangino's first year went, except I think this team was better. And I think this team made more strides because Mangino's teams, you saw some of the things they did. You saw how they competed and how they hit guys and made you work for yards and things like that. And Mangino's teams took deficits and made them smaller to where you saw things more competitive. But this KU team fought. And, I mean, they found a way to win at Texas. They found a way, you know, they were down 14 in the fourth quarter. They come back and tie TCU and lose on a last-second field goal. They're down to West Virginia. They drive down in less than a minute to score. They're going for an onside kick to get the ball back, down one possession. You know, they had Oklahoma. They were leading Oklahoma in the fourth quarter. When you look at this Kansas team from, remember, and this is a key that a lot of us forget, Nate, Leipold got in here in May. His staff didn't get in here until May. These guys did not get to see a quarterback throw a football until like August 5th, okay? They got to coach the players for 4 weeks before they played their first game. I mean, that's almost unheard of, right? That never happens in college football. So to see the progress they made with having them in that short of a time, now they're going to get an off season. They're going to get in the strength and conditioning program with Matt Gildersleeve. They're going to get a spring football. They're going to get a full summer to work out. And I think the strides we saw them make this season, I think you'll see more strides next year.
All right, John, Gary Barnett comes on the show with us every week, and ever since he's started coming on the show, he always says that the second year is the toughest year for a coach, a football coach, at his new school. And so I'm curious what you think. Can you lay out for us what the recruiting plan, the game plan is going to be for Lance Leipold entering his second year and what they're focusing on and what you think are some key areas where they need to win, whether it's, and you tell me whether it's just going the high school route or whether they're going to examine JUCO or rely on any certain positions in the transfer portal. Maybe give us some things that are very important for them to get done in this recruiting, during these recruiting opportunities this offseason.
Yeah, Stephen, I think what you're going to see over the next 2 years, the next two classes are two totally different strategies that they're going to use. Right now, they're going to mix some high school kids in, with a small amount, maybe three or four JUCO kids if they can get the ones they want, and then I think you're going to see a lot of them come from the portal, okay? And that and this is the year for them to do that because, number one, junior college players, they all get a year back of eligibility just like the Division I guys do. So you're seeing a lot of JUCO players that have 3 years left. The Kansas roster with underclassmen, it's the youngest Power 5 roster in America, okay? So you can go get some kids from the portal or JUCO who maybe have 2 years left. That it can help balance things out because you do have a young roster. Next year, Stephen, the 2023 class, you're going to see mainly high school players. But I think this year you're going to see, you know, they've already had a few JUCO kids visit. They've already, I think this weekend they're going to have a couple portal guys visit. So I think this year is going to be more of a focus on getting guys who've been in college programs or JUCO programs, who've gone through a couple years of strength and conditioning. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're more mature. So I think that'll be the focus for this year's class.
See, and I think that to go back to you were talking about the comparisons to the Mangino era, and obviously any KU fan wants to hear that because that's the last time Kansas was relevant in football. And I see a lot of the comparisons, but I also see – you know, Leipold's his own guy. He's not like a Mangino clone or anything. One of the things that to me that Mangino did show, though, with his staff was recruiting isn't about, you know, wowing kids with your star power as a coach like Charlie Weiss tried to do and like Les Miles tried to do. It's about outworking people and researching and turning over every rock that you possibly can to find these kids. And I just feel confident that Leipold's going to do that. Last question, John, about that. He made a couple changes to the staff right after the season was over. What can you tell us about that and the staff going forward?
Yeah, Nate, you know, and that's, again, you know, like you guys brought up Barnett, and he said the second year is the hardest. Well, after your first year, you kind of see, you know, some adjustments that need to be made or what you think is the better fit for your program. So, you know, they got rid of two coaches that were on staff that you know, he inherited. So it'll be interesting. They promoted Jordan Peterson, who I think is a really good football coach. I'm assuming he'll coach the corners, Nate. I went back and read the release, and I think everybody's assuming that it will be Peterson with corners and Taiwo Onatolu, who came with him from Buffalo, would be the D-line coach. But I noticed in the release they didn't specify the positions. So I'm just wondering if they're still – looking at things to figure out where to plug guys or move guys around. But, you know, it's one of those things. It just comes with the territory. It's never fun. Hey, when you've covered Kansas football, Nate, as long as I have, you get to know the coaches, okay, on every staff. And it's hard to see guys lose jobs. You know, yeah. It's their livelihood. But it's part of the gig. And when you got Leipold coming in, he's got to put together the staff that he thinks has the best chemistry and is going to give him the best chance, you know, to stay together and win in the future.
John, as always, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
That's John Kirby from jalexland.com. That's your Border Patrol Blitz and a little bit of fast break. But we'll continue the fast break, college basketball, with Jared Sutton, a very handsome guest on Sports Radio 810 WHB.